Welcome to today's deep dive. Today, we are going to try and cure a collective hallucination.
That is quite the promise to start with.
I know, right? But think about it. When we talk about technology, we tend to use these very specific words. Words like cyberspace.
Right, or the cloud.
Exactly, the cloud or the web. And those words, they paint this picture of something ethereal. You know, something light and fluffy.
Floating high above all of our messy earthly problems.
Yes. It creates this illusion of this like borderless digital utopia where everything just hums along perfectly.
It's a very comforting illusion to buy into, honestly. I mean, most of us just interact with a slick pane of glass on our phones.
Yeah. And because that interface is so clean, we completely forget about the physical reality that's actually keeping it alive.
We forget about the thousands of miles of undersea cables wrapped in steel, you
right,
know,
for sure.
And the massive concrete data centers pulling down just gigawatts of local power, not to mention the incredibly complex human supply chains that have to navigate physical geography to build every single component.
And that's our mission today. For you listening, we want to look at the massive gap between that fluffy cloud illusion and reality.
It's a big gap.
It really is. We have a huge stack of sources today, and we're going to look at a genuinely jarring contrast happening right now in the industry.
Right, because on one side, we are seeing the sheer mind-boggling scale of recent tech acquisitions.
Yes, these totally digital, borderless ambitions to basically own the logic of the internet itself.
But then on the other side, we're going to watch those exact same ambitions slam straight into the physical realities of geopolitics.
And as we'll get into later, fundamentally broken enterprise AI testing.
Yeah, it is arguably the defining tension of the tech industry today.
It really is.
We are watching digital infrastructure rapidly consolidate into these near monopolies, right? Controlled by just a few cash-rich companies.
But at the exact same time, the physical hardware is fracturing.
Exactly. The supply chains powering that digital infrastructure are being pulled apart by global conflicts, national borders, trade policies.
So the digital world wants to merge, but the physical world is dividing.
That's a perfect way to put it.
Well, before we jump into all that, I do want to set some ground rules for you listening. We are ruthlessly filtering our source stack today.
Oh, yeah. There is a ton of noisy news out there right now.
So much noise. Like, Disney just dropped a tidal wave of Marvel and Star Wars announcements at D23.
Apple is overhauling its smart home lineup.
Sony released a new 66-megapixel camera. We're setting all of that aside.
Right. No consumer hardware reviews today. No entertainment hype.
None of it. We are strictly focusing on the macro-level industry shifts that are quietly rewiring how the future actually operates.
Which brings us to the first major shift we need to look at.
The mega mergers.
Yeah, the mega mergers. The scale of the financial maneuvering we're seeing right now is entirely unprecedented.
And it's happening at the absolute foundational layer of the internet.
It is. The numbers are just staggering.
Let's unpack this. According to both TechCrunch and Engadget, SpaceX has officially closed its acquisition of the AI coding assistant startup, Cursor.
And the price tag on that is $60 billion.
It's $60 billion. Not million, yeah. Billion.
Right, for a coding assistant.
And at the exact same time, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Stripe, the modern giant of developer payments, is in talks to acquire PayPal.
Yeah, PayPal had actually turned down an offer previously from Stripe and the private equity firm Advent, but they are back at the negotiating table.
Okay, I have to be honest. I'm struggling to see the end game here with the SpaceX thing. Like, SpaceX builds physical rockets.
They do.
They weld steel. They build engines. Why are they dropping $60 billion on a software company? I mean, how does an AI coding tool actually change how you launch a satellite into orbit?
Well, we need to look past the superficial labels here. You know, these are not consumer plays.
Oh.
If you look at SpaceX buying Cursor, you have to look past the phrase AI coding startup. For an aerospace company to drop $60 billion, they are executing a massive strategic pivot.
But why?
Because modern aerospace is entirely defined by software now. Like, think about the Starlink satellite network.
Right. Thousands of satellites.
Exactly. Thousands of them in low Earth orbit. And they need to dynamically route internet traffic and constantly adjust their trajectories to avoid debris.
Which means communicating with ground stations constantly.
Yeah. And the code required to manage all that logic is just unfathomably complex. So what Cursor does, and this is why it's valued so highly, is it doesn't just act like a fancy autocomplete. autocomplete.
Right. 60 billion for autocomplete would be nuts.
Totally. Cursor can ingest an entire massive code base, understand the architectural logic, and generate complex software engineering solutions completely autonomously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. SpaceX isn't buying a tool to help their human developers type faster. They are buying a system to aggressively automate software engineering itself.
They want to internalize the brain that writes the code for their robotics and their spacecraft.
Exactly. They are trying to own the underlying logic engine of their entire physical operation.
Okay, that actually makes the Stripe and PayPal negotiations make a lot more sense, too, when you frame it like that.
How so?
Well, I mean, the mechanics there are different, right? PayPal feels like the legacy internet.
Very much so.
And Stripe feels like the modern back end. It's like playing Monopoly, but you're not just buying houses, you're trying to buy the bank and the board itself.
That's a good analogy.
What actually happens mechanically if Stripe swallows PayPal, though?
So, to understand that, you really have to separate a payment gateway from a payment processor.
Okay.
When you buy something online, there is the interface, you see the digital wallet, and
yeah.
PayPal completely dominates that space.
Right. The button you click at checkout.
Yes. But then there is the back-end routing, the gateway that securely takes your encrypted credit card data, talks to the banking networks, checks for fraud, and, you know, actually moves the money.
And Stripe dominates that modern back-end routing for developers.
Exactly.
So it's like they're trying to own both the alphabet and the printing press. Like, Cursor writes the underlying letters of the software, and Stripe wants to be the mechanism that charges you every time a page is printed anywhere on the web.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. If Stripe successfully acquires PayPal, they are uniting the old guard consumer interface with the modern developer backend.
Creating a near monopoly.
A near monopoly on how money moves across the web, yeah. You really have to step back and look at the trend here.
Which is what?
The most cash-rich, privately held tech companies are moving to own the absolute foundational layers of the digital economy.
Right.
If you control how the code is written and you control the routing of how the money changes hands, you essentially set the toll rates for the entire digital highway.
And because these are privately held companies, they aren't answering to public shareholders who just want a quick quarterly dividend.
Exactly. They have the capital to make these 10 or 20 year structural plays.
But, you know, if you just looked at the software layer, you would think these companies are building unstoppable, borderless digital empires.
You would.
But if you look at the physical layer, those empires are slamming headfirst into geopolitical brick walls.
And this is where the whole concept of a borderless cloud completely falls apart.
Right.
Software requires silicon to run. Rockets require metal to fly.
Susceptible things.
Yes. All of that physical material exists in the real world. And the real world is subject to physical geography, human politics, and national borders.
So let's look at the actual facts on the ground from our sources regarding that physical hardware layer.
Okay.
We have reports from Apple Insider and 9to5Mac that the U.S. Commerce Secretary under the Trump administration, Howard Lutnick, has explicitly urged Apple not to purchase Mac memory chips from a Chinese supplier called CXMT.
And the context here is super important. There's an ongoing severe global chip shortage.
Right. And Apple needs an astronomical volume of memory chips just to build Macs at the scale the global market demands.
Which is why Apple was actively testing CXMT's chips specifically to solve this supply bottleneck.
Because CXMT has rapidly built up the physical manufacturing capacity to become a major global player.
Yeah. And it creates a fascinating logistical dilemma for a company like Apple.
How so?
Well, Apple operates on economies of scale. Their revenue is entirely dictated by how many physical units they can assemble and ship.
Right, they have to move hardware.
Exactly. But they operate in a reality where they cannot simply let supply and demand dictate their supply chain. They can't just route around global chip shortages by tapping into Chinese manufacturing capacity.
Not without triggering intense federal scrutiny from Washington.
Precisely.
So the political border acts as a literal physical supply chain barrier.
Yes.
It doesn't matter how advanced Apple's software ecosystem is or how much consumer demand exists if they physically aren't allowed to buy the silicon memory from the factories that have the capacity to produce it.
And regardless of where anyone listening stands on trade policy, the mechanical reality for these tech companies is that government mandates override globalized logistics.
A single political decree can basically bottleneck a multinational corporation's entire hardware roadmap.
Completely.
But here's where it gets really interesting. If you want to see an even more stark example of how physical reality disrupts tech ambitions. Look at the aerospace sector.
Oh, yeah.
Ars Technica is reporting that Ukraine used ground-launched Flamingo cruise missiles to strike the Progress Rocket Space Center.
And this isn't a small border skirmish we're talking about.
Not at all. This facility is in Russia's Samara region, which is roughly 900 kilometers away from the Ukrainian border.
Wow.
Yeah, and President Zelensky publicly confirmed this strike. This factory is the absolute heart of the Roscosmos operation.
It's where they assemble the Soyuz 2 and Soyuz 5 rockets, right?
Exactly. As well as military satellites.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the implications of hitting that specific facility are immediate. When a physical assembly line of that magnitude is damaged or destroyed, it directly impacts Russia's orbital launch cadence.
Because you cannot launch a satellite without a fuselage and engines.
Exactly. It completely stalls their ability to replenish the surveillance satellites they are actively relying on for the ongoing war.
So no matter how advanced the nation's satellite network is, the entire system is dependent on a highly vulnerable physical assembly building sitting on the ground.
Sitting right there on the ground.
The incredible irony here is just wild to me.
What do you mean?
Think about the two things we've just discussed happening simultaneously. On one side of the globe, SpaceX is casually writing a $60 billion check for an AI company to automate their software engineering in a completely digital environment.
Right.
And on the exact same day, actual physical orbital launch factories are being blown up by cruise missiles.
It's a huge contrast.
How does a company even function in that environment? I mean, how do you plan a 10-year hardware roadmap when a decree from the Commerce Department or a cruise missile strike can instantly rewrite where you're allowed to build your products?
Well, you do it by accepting that efficiency is no longer the primary goal. Redundancy is.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. For decades, the tech industry operated on the assumption that globalization would just keep flattening the world.
The belief was that borders wouldn't matter for technology.
Right. And you could always find the cheapest, most efficient place to manufacture a component. But what we are seeing now, whether it's with silicon memory chips or rocket fuselages, is that physical geography and geopolitics have violently reasserted themselves into the tech industry.
So the digital world is desperately trying to consolidate, but the physical world is throwing up walls.
Yes. The supply chain is infinitely more delicate than we realize. A missed shipment of memory chips delays a global product launch.
A damaged assembly line alters a nation's surveillance capabilities.
Exactly. Physical hardware is fragile.
Which brings us to a massive logical pivot in our deep dive today.
Okay.
So if the physical hardware layer is this fragile and chaotic, then the automated software layer, the AI, that these mega companies are spending tens of billions of dollars on it, has to be absolutely bulletproof, right?
You would think so.
Because if the physical world is unpredictable, the digital brain trying to manage it has to be perfect. But our sources are showing that the way we actually evaluate and test this AI technology is fundamentally broken.
And this is perhaps the most concerning macro shift we are covering today.
Yeah, I think so.
We have officially moved past the hype phase of artificial intelligence. We are now crashing into the messy reality of enterprise deployment.
Companies are actively integrating these tools into their daily operations.
Right. But what the data is showing us is that the foundational metrics we use to decide if an AI is trustworthy are deeply, deeply flawed.
Let's break down the VentureBeat report we have in the stack. Mm. They highlighted a critical flaw in how enterprise development teams are testing LLM-assisted tooling.
Yeah, this report was eye-opening.
I want to make sure we define our terms here for you listening. The report talks about an evaluation harness, revealing that AI models are frequently at their most confident when they are completely, factually incorrect.
Yes.
First off, what exactly is an evaluation harness?
So think of an evaluation harness as an automated testing environment.
Okay.
When you build an AI system for a specific task, say, analyzing financial data, you don't just release it into the wild. You run it through a harness, which is essentially a standardized exam.
Got it.
It feeds the AI thousands of test prompts and automatically grades the AI's answers against a known rubric to see how accurate it is.
Okay, so the harness is giving the AI a test. But why would the AI be at its most confident when it's giving the wrong answer? That feels counterintuitive.
It does, but it's because of the core mechanism of how large language models, or LLMs, actually function.
Okay.
An LLM is not a factual database. It doesn't know facts the way you or I do, or the way a traditional search engine retrieves a specific document.
Right. It's not looking things up.
No, an LLM is a probabilistic engine. It predicts what word or token should logically come next in a sequence based on its training data.
Okay, so it's guessing.
Educated guessing, yeah. Its primary goal is grammatical fluency and structural coherence. It just wants to build a sentence that looks perfectly natural.
So it's optimizing for sounding smart, not necessarily for being right.
Exactly. And the core issue the VentureBeat report highlights is human reliance on subjective review.
What do you mean?
Development teams are relying way too heavily on qualitative checks. A human evaluator reads the AI's output and essentially asks, "Does this sound right?"
Oh, I see.
And because the LLM is specifically engineered to produce highly fluent, grammatically flawless text, it passes that human intuition check with flying colors.
Even when it's hallucinating.
Especially then, it sounds incredibly authoritative even when it is making up entirely fake information.
You know, it reminds me of a behavioral flaw we see in corporate environments all the time.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
It's like hiring a remarkably smooth-talking executive.
Oh.
Like, they show up to the board meeting in a custom suit. They speak with absolute conviction. They use all the correct industry buzzwords. And their presentation deck is visually stunning.
Very polished.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you were to actually sit down and audit their spreadsheets, you'd find that all the underlying numbers are completely fabricated.
But nobody checks.
Right. Because they possess such grammatical fluency and presented with such confidence, nobody bothered to double-check the math. We naturally conflate fluency with accuracy.
That is the exact trap enterprise companies are falling into with AI right now.
It's a huge blind spot.
It is. The danger here isn't that an AI is going to make an obvious, silly mistake that a human will easily catch. The danger is what the industry calls quiet failures.
So what does this all mean? Let's make this concrete. Give me an example of how a quiet failure actually happens in an enterprise setting.
Okay, imagine a financial analyst using an AI tool to review a flagged transaction for regulatory compliance.
All right.
The analyst asks the AI, "Does this transaction violate Rule 40B?" Pretty standard query. Right. And the AI responds with a beautifully formatted three-paragraph explanation detailing why the transaction is clear, citing specific clauses and legal precedents.
And it looks legit.
The language is sophisticated and perfectly coherent. The human analyst reads it. It sounds perfectly professional, so they just rubber stamp the approval.
But the AI just probabilistically predicted those legal clauses.
Right. It hallucinated a perfectly plausible sounding regulation that doesn't actually exist in the rule book anywhere.
Wow.
That is a quiet failure. The human reviewer missed it because the text looked elegant and authoritative.
So the report mentions that enterprise AI requires ground truth verification to fix this. What does it actually mean, mechanics-wise? How do companies actually fix this?
Ground truth verification means moving away from human vibe checks and moving toward mathematical or logical proofs.
Okay, so automating the check.
Yeah. Instead of having a human read the output to see if it sounds good, you build systems where the AI's output is programmatically verified against a hard database of
So
facts.
it's cross-referencing itself.
Exactly. If the AI cites a law, the system automatically checks the legal database to ensure that exact law exists word for word before even showing it to the human.
That makes a lot of sense.
You have to remove subjective human intuition from the testing loop entirely because human intuition is too easily hacked by confident-sounding language.
If we tie this back to the beginning of our discussion, this is frankly terrifying.
It's definitely concerning.
We talked about SpaceX spending $60 billion to automate their software engineering with Cursor.
Right.
If your AI coding assistant hallucinating legal text is bad, imagine it hallucinating a logic error in the software meant to calculate orbital trajectories.
Yeah, that's a whole different level of risk.
And if the human reviewer misses it because the code itself looks syntactically elegant, in that scenario, you don't just get a software bug. You lose a physical rocket.
And that is the ultimate intersection of the digital and the physical.
Yeah.
You cannot plan a 10-year hardware roadmap or build near monopolies on payment routing if the logic engine driving those decisions is quietly failing behind a veneer of grammatical perfection.
We have traveled a pretty wild path today.
We covered a lot of ground.
We really did. We started high up in the stratosphere, looking at the sheer scale of digital ambition, $60 billion code generation acquisitions, and Stripe trying to buy PayPal to create a total chokehold on web transaction routing.
Right. Companies trying to own the alphabet and the printing press of the internet.
Exactly. Then we crashed hard back down to earth. We looked at the grounded realities of how delicate physical hardware really is.
Seeing cruise missiles taking out rocket assembly factories.
Yeah, and politicians dictating where companies like Apple can and cannot buy their silicon memory chips.
It's a messy reality.
It is. And finally, we dug into the foundational flaw and how we are evaluating the AI meant to manage all this chaos, discovering that our systems are incredibly vulnerable simply because large language models know how to sound remarkably confident when they're hallucinating.
It really paints a picture of an industry and, frankly, a civilization in a state of deep transition.
It really does.
And for you listening, as you navigate your own professional world, this requires a significant shift in perspective.
How so?
Well, tomorrow, when you are at work using a shiny new AI tool to summarize a meeting, or when you read a headline about the next multi-billion-dollar mega merger, I encourage you to look past the slick digital interface.
Right.
Ask yourself, what physical geopolitical realities are quietly dictating how this product gets made? What unseen logical framework might be quietly failing behind the scenes?
And who is strategically monopolizing the foundational plumbing that makes it all function?
Exactly.
We're trying to build the most advanced, beautiful digital castles in the sky, but the physical pillars holding them up are constantly being kicked out from under them.
It's a precarious balancing act.
Which leaves us with a final, slightly unsettling thought to mull over for you listening.
All right, let's hear it.
If these tech mega corporations continue to aggressively consolidate borderless digital infrastructure, like buying up all the code generation and all the money routing,
right,
while at the exact same time, the physical hardware layer becomes increasingly restricted by national borders, trade policies, and actual physical wars, will we eventually see the internet fundamentally fracture?
Oh, wow.
Are we heading toward a future where we no longer have a single worldwide web, but rather geographically isolated, corporate-owned ecosystems that are completely walled off from one another?
That's a heavy thought.
The seamless cloud might have always been a comforting illusion, but we are about to find out just how heavy, fragmented, and vulnerable the real machinery actually is.